Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, we are joined by Michael Palumbas, founder of Family Wealth and Legacy and host of the Family Biz Show. Michael is a nationally recognized advisor to family-owned enterprises and the creator of two breakthrough frameworks, the Family Business Family Office and the Family Business Flywheel. Both are designed to help multi-generational families turn complexity into continuity. A second-generation leader himself, Michael has spent decades guiding families through the intersection of business growth, personal wealth, and legacy planning. His work centers on one mission, ensuring family businesses not only survive, but thrive across generations. Michael, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Ed, it's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Really,
awesome.
It's a pleasure. And yes. It's always fun doing this with somebody who's gone through the multiple generation and the transition themselves.
Indeed it is. Let's talk about that. You grew up inside a family business, and now you dedicate your career to helping others sustain theirs.
It's funny. When I got into the business, I was working for Xerox at the time, and I got frustrated that my territories kept changing, the world kept changing around me based on the glass ceiling, so to speak. And I happened to be in Rochester. My father was in my sales territory. Now, he wasn't looking for a copier or anything, but I popped in to say hello to him and was expressing my frustration. He said, "Tell me, what do you do?" I'm like, I sell copiers. He's like, "What's the impact that you make in the world?" And I'm like, "Oh, I make these offices more efficient." I'm like, they're just patent answers. And my father looked at me, he said, "I get paid very well for having a positive impact on the people I serve and the families and the employees around them. There's a ripple effect to all the work that we do." And I was like, "I don't have that." And then he threw out the fact that he doesn't have a glass ceiling and his sales territory is the whole United States, if you wanted to look at it that way. And I was like, okay, I want to do more. And that's what got it started. Dad and I realized that for whatever reason, we didn't work great together. It was just a weird dynamic. And I don't know, even to this day, I couldn't put my finger on it exactly. So when I started in the business, I had been in Syracuse, Dad was in Rochester, and I joined the Chamber of Commerce, had a family business group at the time in Syracuse. That's cool. And I joined them to help me understand what was going on. And you're a wealth advisor at the time coming in. They're like, "Oh, don't sell us. Don't." I'm like, "No, I'm here for me." And they just laughed as I was telling them some of the stories and the things that would happen. Again, not right or wrong. It's Dad was out. I don't think Dad thought of himself as a family business advisor at the time. He was just advising businesses that happened to be family owned and didn't under those dynamic pieces weren't right there. But I, after going through it, I sat there. That family business group in Syracuse really allowed me to be okay and helped me to understand that there is no right or wrong way. But for you, this is what's happening. Here's what's going on. And your dad's not really open to these conversations that you want to have, and which was fine. And so this is what you've got to live with. And you got to make your decisions from here. Thankfully, I started in, Dad was in Rochester, I was in Syracuse. We made through all of those things, and then I moved back to Rochester to be part of the business. But it was unique. I really am thankful to the people in Syracuse that helped guide me through my journey.
It's pretty cool that the chamber would have something like that. I've heard of family business forums and roundtables, but typically not driven from a chamber of commerce. That's cool that they had that offering.
Yeah, it was. And what's unique is they realized that it was probably too big for them to keep it going, and they did end up partnering with a local university. And so now the New York Family Business Center happens to be in Syracuse, New York.
I see. So, quick question then. When you joined your dad, was the focus on family business, or was that just a more of a byproduct of, hey, your clientele happened to be largely family governed organizations?
Yeah. So for Dad had two practices, I would call them. One was he was around in the heyday of Kodak. So the Kodak executives were a big part of what he was doing. And then he had business owners, and he just referred to them as business owner clients because most of the time he was dealing with the founder or dealing with the current, generation that was acting as the founder at this point. That's the controlling generation. You're talking the 80s. And the idea of family business and serving a family business was really just starting to evolve. It was the beginning of that conversation. So he didn't think about it that way. When we transitioned, when he was retiring, he transitioned his executives and retirees over to one partner. And then I took over the family businesses because we realized the amount of work that I had done for the so many years, it was just a much better fit.
Okay, I see. Okay, so it evolved that way. Okay, understood. And gosh, I remember you brought back a memory when I was probably in my 20s and just starting the buyout for my father. It didn't go forward. It was a predecessor of Vistage. So I think it was called Tech back then. And it was not a fully formed. So I went to an introductory meeting, and it would happen to be at one of those days where, I don't know if you had one of those days where you just had it out with your dad and were feeling the burn of that. And I expressed how I was feeling, and the members at the time, much more senior than I, brought me back down to center. And what that led to was I went home and I wrote out, here's what needs to happen for this organization for me to be effectively taking it over, for my father to effectively transition out, and for us to drive forward in the future. And, as a 20-year-old, that's just like my ideas on paper. But looking back, that was probably like a almost like a fledgling business plan. And it was crude and it was raw, and it was through the lens of a probably a 25 or 26-year-old. But and that was my guiding light then for the next several years until he did exit and we concluded the buyout. But it's coming back to your story, having that peer access and talking with others can be huge.
Yeah, I recommend if you're in a family business, because it is so complicated when you put family business and ownership combined, that three circle model, there's just so many interactive points that you need some support. It's not the same as any other business because you take the family aspect out of there and you just have a business. And you may have owners that might not be working in the business, but that's a lot less complicated than that, the adding in that third circle.
For sure.
And so you need that support. You need that place to maybe sometimes let the air out of your system, and other times to just to be reassured that you're not crazy, that these things are happening. And this isn't normal, but it is sometimes in a family business. There is no normal. It's changing and growing and evolving.
And especially when you got two crazy passionate Italians, my goodness, look out. Yeah, things are going
100%.
to fly. So we're loud and we fight and then we hug it out. Not everybody realizes that, though. I learned early on, don't do it in front of staff.
Exactly. But that's the best part about family business is 99% of the time, you know that you can trust this person. And so you have love and you have trust. And that's why the family business, why we get involved with them in the first place is because it's like, if I'm going to be in the foxhole with somebody, I want to be able to lock arms and know that they've got my back. And 99.9, I'd even say, of the time, you have that. It's when you don't have that in a family business that it really hurts. Those are the moments that get painful.
So that's a true point. I want to dig into something that you had talked about in some of your previous posts and writings. It's the collapse of public company life expectancy versus the endurance of family enterprises. What do you think? Unpack that a little bit. What do you think gives a family business that long-term resilience versus the public entity?
It's real simple from my perspective. It's that quarterly reporting. If I have to work on my earnings on a quarterly basis, how can I do anything that my research, my development, the plan that I'm putting together, how can I say, ooh, 5 years from now, this is going to be fabulous? Stockholders don't want to hear that stuff. And so where the family business, when I'm starting it, it's like I'm thinking about what would it look like if my kids came into this business? What would it look like if we did this for clients over the next 20 years? Could we really get to here? We can ask questions in a family business that you just don't get a chance to do in a publicly traded company.
That's absolutely true. I think it's even more magnified when you're dealing with a private equity backed enterprise. They tend to look at the world in 3 to 5 year sprints, and you've got to make those returns hell or high water. Whereas, you know, most family businesses are thinking more in the terms of, like you say, in decades or generations.
And matter of fact, as you just said that out loud, I hope somebody out there, and I'm sure they're out there, but a family business private equity group would be a private equity group that thinks in generations with the groups that they're bringing in. I think when you say that, I think Warren Buffett's probably a really good example of that. When he was buying companies, regardless of whether they were family owned or publicly traded or whatnot, he always said, I'm never selling them. That's not the point here. I want to bring them in because I think they're great businesses. He did lots of research to bring them in, and then he would spend lots of time before he let them go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I realize I painted a broad brush there. Not all private equity firms are created equal.
Of course.
And there are some that absolutely do look to keep that family business feel, continuity, style of go to market very much intact, because they recognize that I think another strength of the family business enterprise is, and not with just within family, but the deeply held relationships of all stakeholders.
Agreed.
It's very important and really prized above all else. I talked to a 17 million dollar company. His top customers, they have his cell phone, they call him, he's the CEO. So what? It's a relationship.
Oh.
They know they can get him anytime, and he'll make time no matter what, and they have that kind of relationship, and that's hard to replicate.
Yeah.
That can be hard to replicate.
And one of the other things with family businesses is that, like, you got to see your dad work, and you knew what that business, at least from your perspective and watching him do things, what it was like. I just had somebody on the show that is in the clothing business, and they make custom suits and shirts and just a fabulous family business, third generation. And one of the things that they brought up that I just was like, made my heart sing, was that they have employees that are second generation or maybe third generation, because they got to see their parents sewing and being master, come on, tailors. And they got to see it in the house. And then they were handed a sewing kit and some fabric. And that's just masterful. One of my favorite families that I've worked with through the years, just from a standpoint of, like, it's a 200-year-old family business. The grandfather was a geneticist. But so he would splice different trees together and different things to get different varieties to grow. And he would create his own varieties of different things. And he would take his grandson and with him. And his grandson just remembers how much fun it was to be in the greenhouse and to do this work, and that did it for his whole life after that. I think sometimes we talk about, where we talk about nepotism, but we forget the other side of nepotism is that it's just like this pride and this passion of, like, and this, I learned something about an industry for 20 years as I was growing up, or 18 years or whatever it was, and you got to see it. And so you have a different viewpoint of what it was like to, a baker, a tailor, the candlestick maker. There we go. I got them all in.
I certainly did. I don't know if the same was true for you, but I really took for granted how much I learned just through simple observation that just sunk in over the years. Because I was, my earliest memories as a child was going with my dad into the office. Back in the day as a marketing firm, it wasn't all digital. It was huge artboard. So I get to play with markers and draw on these big drafting tables. And it was fun. I'd watch him do his thing. And it was, so I definitely absorbed a lot that I didn't even realize. So coming into the business was not that foreign to me.
And your dad and my dad must have known each other, because my first job, my dad did two things that I thought were masterful in hindsight. I didn't know it at the time, but he was back in the day when he would make cold calls to business owners to go out and talk about what he did. And so he would need prospect cards. And so he would give me books, and I would fill out the prospect card, the name, the owner, the phone number, so that he could go through and yada, yada. And that was my Saturday mornings from 8 in the morning until noon. And this is back in the day. I'm trying to think, minimum wage back then might have been $2 an hour, and he was paying me 10. And what he said to me is, he goes, Michael, you're doing $10 an hour work, so I got to pay you $10 an hour. He goes, this is when one of those things happens for me, when I become a client, a customer, that's really important to what I'm doing, so I'm willing to pay you accordingly, which it was a really neat lesson.
And that's funny because that was my first pay level, $10 an hour back in 95.
That's hilarious. That's great.
I touched on it in the intro, and I just want to create some time and space here.
Sure.
To unpack a concept, the family business, family office.
Sure.
What does that look like in practice, and how does it maybe differ from what sounds like maybe the traditional family office model?
Yeah. So the traditional family office model is, it's after we have the liquidity event, number one. And
okay.
So I have all of the, before I had this operating business. And so now I have all of this liquid cash, this liquid money that needs to be invested. I'm still going to have tax problems. I'm still going to have legal problems, estate tax, estate thinkings. And where does all this go? And somebody's got to invest it. I ran this business. What do I know about investing? I don't want to be the one picking and choosing after I have this. So I hire investment people and tax people and an attorney and put them on staff. And I basically, the family office is just creating a whole nother business. Okay. The world has become really complicated. And so when you start looking at wealth advisory services today and taxes and legal, the business owner, they can't know all of those things. And they're so stretched for time that you really need to be looking to say, I need somebody to quarterback this stuff. And typically, so what happens is when I'm doing $5 million of revenue, I don't have the same level of problems that I do when I'm doing $50 million or $500 million of revenue. And I definitely don't have the time. And along the lines, not quite sure whether they have the advisors are still working in silos, which is often the case, and the attorney's never talking to the wealth advisor, the business coach never talks to the estate planning attorney, and at the same time...
Yeah, they always promise that they will. They always promise. Don't they always
yes.
say that?
Hey, yes.
We're going to work with the team, right? And they always talk about the team. I have yet to see that team concept in action, man. I don't know.
So we force it. And so what happens at the end of the day... If you don't hold one person accountable for those things, then it doesn't happen. So I become the person that's accountable to make sure that the attorney and the accountant and the business coach and the family dynamics coach are all talking to say, what is the vision and what are the objectives of this family? And what are the things that we're all working on? And if we all share what's happening every single time I do that, let me rephrase that. Very often, one out of four times that we have that meeting, we uncover something big. So sometimes it doesn't mean you do it once, you do it twice and nothing happens. But the third one is, oh, wait a minute, they're about to sell this, or they're about to grow the business. They've got a new strategic plan that's going to grow the business 50% in the next 3 years. We better be thinking about these things from the different silos so that everybody's seeing what they're seeing. So that's what the family business, family office is about, is just having that one coordinated plan and somebody accountable for all of the stuff. They may not be, I can't do taxes, but I read a lot of them. I can't draft wills, but I read a lot of them. And I know what goes into a trust. I know business coaching. I know what a strategy and a one-page plan looks like. If you're having level growth for the next 3 to 5 years, big deal. But if you're going to jump 50%, we better get the tax guy involved. We better get the attorney involved and figure out what we're doing.
And that's a huge, what you're doing is huge, just because there's all that complexity. And on top of that, the rules governing, say, building trusts in a family office, like say 10 years ago, markedly different from what they are today. The same is true of a lot of other investment vehicles. So in all that complexity, everything is changing all the time.
Yeah.
Lot to manage.
I say that I got lucky. My father was working for the Diocese of Rochester, and he had gone to school to be a priest and then realized that he liked with girls, and that was the priesthood wasn't going to be for him.
Yeah, not conducive for that.
Yeah. My grandmother sent all four boys to the seminary and only one came out a priest.
Okay.
That was That was obviously she wanted a priest out of the family.
Okay.
And so dad still working for the Diocese of Rochester. My biological father had died when I was 5. He meets my mom. They get married. He went from a bachelor that could live off of X amount of dollars in the 70s to married with two kids in a flip of a switch.
Okay.
And so he's like, I don't think I can handle working for the diocese anymore. The company that he went to, it was Connecticut General Life Insurance at the time, and they had a manager in the US that the whole company took this philosophy, and it was serve first, last, and always. And my father heard that, and he goes, tell me, unpack that for me. What does that mean to you? And they're like, if you just teach, if you educate, if and stop me, you're not, it's this is not a sales process. This is just a find out where they're a mess, find out what's going on for them, show them the pros and cons of how they could fix it, and then just serve them, and everything else just falls into place. That philosophy was like whoop, hook, line, and sinker for my father. And
Yeah.
we still follow that same thing. Stuart Smith wrote that in the 40s, and we
Yeah.
still follow that philosophy today.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I want to touch on another model too. And again, referenced in the opening of the show, the family business flywheel. Talk about that. What's that all about? What inspired that? And how does that work for the family enterprise?
Sure. As a wealth advisor, you could call up 100 business owners and ask them what keeps them up at night. If it was never their estate taxes, it wasn't even income taxes, even though they hated paying taxes. It wasn't their wealth advisory stuff. It was, am I the right CEO for this job? Do I have the right people? How do I attract and retain top employees? How do I get them to toe the line? Why am I the bottleneck? It was always about the business. And so that was one. And one of the families that I was working with, we had done wealth advisory plans, financial plans for 8 family members, 7 family members at the time. And in one of the meetings, somebody from the controlling generation said, what took care of 3 families and fed us and provided the lifestyles that we had was wonderful. There's no way when we transition this business to the next generation that it's going to take care of the 6 cousins and brothers that are there. It's just not enough for them to have the same lifestyle. They're doing about $10 million of revenue at the time that this was happening. And the only way they were going to do that is to grow. And so G2 was a bottleneck to G3. And so we needed to talk about what were those bottlenecks, what were those things. We needed to create a self operating business that could grow and had the ability to scale. That company's doing $50 million today, over 50 million. It's a couple of different companies, but still now all transitioned to the next generation. And they've done a fabulous job of putting in a player leadership team. The G2 had the thing that, unwritten rule that said nobody in the business is going to make more than a family member. Well, that's a stumbling block. That's a bottleneck because that limits who you're hiring and what you're doing. They didn't really have the culture of accountability. They weren't planning. I remember when G2 said, when we're going to go from 10 million to 20 million, and one of them just laughed. There's no way you're going to do that. And here they are several years later and far surpassed that. But that's where, so the flywheel is all about if we can strengthen the business. That has a positive impact on the wealth lever because if I'm growing enterprise value, if I'm growing cash flows and profits in the business, if I'm making my life better in the business, then that's going to make more issues within the wealth. And so now we have to do the same thing there. Now watch what happens. When we have no money, very rarely do we have family dynamics issues. We all love each other. It's easy, kumbaya. But as soon as we start throwing in the fact that now the business is really kicking off some money and we have some wealth, and who's going to be the CEO and who's going to not work in the business and how do they make any money out of this stuff? Now we got to start thinking about the sustainable family legacy lever. And so what we do there is we want to be focused in on the values, the vision, and the purpose of the family, not the business, not the wealth, just them as a unit. How do we get the communication and connection? Make sure that we're keeping that stuff. We always want to make sure the family's what? Sitting down at the Thanksgiving dinner table, kumbaya. We want to keep kumbaya. And then at the end of the day, how do we get the two generations, the outgoing and the incoming, leading together instead of us versus them kind of a thinking? My way or the highway, or we've always done it this way. And the only way those things happen is through the focus in on the family. So when, and I'll think about that, if I start those conversations when the rising generation is younger, they're going to have better communication styles. They're going to have better leadership styles. They're going to be better off running the business. So again, now each lever just turns on itself. And it is, go back to Jim Collins, the flywheel effect. They, now the family has the flywheel effect for generations.
Cool. When you speak about some of the risks that family businesses, we talked a little bit about growth bottleneck, right? And then wealth fragmentation. And then the third that you had referenced was legacy drift. What is legacy drift? What does that mean?
Real simply, it's as we go from generation to generation two, they were siblings. They grew up in the same house with mom and dad. Their values were the same. They saw all the same values. But then they each got married and had their own houses. But the siblings, still tight and all good. Everybody's Goombas and good. And here we are. My dad is Italian. Your dad's Italian. When you get to the third generation, though, now if there's three cousins or five cousins, they all grew up in different houses.
Okay.
And so now the impact of the values and the communication styles and the purpose and what they think, you know, about the business or money is different. You get out to fourth or fifth generation, there's no control because everybody, you've got people marrying in, and now you have the impact of that. So I always tell people that sustainable family legacy, in order to avoid drift, every generation, every few years, needs to get back together and restate, why do we exist beyond money? What is our purpose? What are our shared values? We understand that we have different values. When you got married, you and your wife came from different places. You didn't have exactly the same values. She has some that you don't have. You have some that she doesn't have, but you're married because of the shared values. That's the glue that holds you together. So we just need to identify those. And then we need to create a vision for the future. And then we start talking about family governance and family dynamics. And now we might have to put some rules in place to make sure that these things continue to work. But each generation has to think about, as new people are coming in and getting married and the family is changing and evolving and growing, we need just to be thinking about those things.
Interesting. Now, on the Family Biz Show, you've talked to hundreds of business leaders. And I often wonder this, and I'd love to get your take on it, Michael. So as a second gen, and maybe I'm more in tune to it because I am one, there seem to be definitive stylistic traits of a second gen versus a first gen. And then I'm even noticing, and I haven't fully articulated it yet, but when I see some of those third and fourth gens, stylistically a little bit different too. So what is a trait that you see, and it may not be one, it may be a basket of them, that enables those families that do go multi-legacy, that go to that third, that fourth, maybe even that fifth generation of family leadership? What is it in them that has the resiliency that you see?
One of the things that repeats itself over and over again is that the current generation, controlling generation, has the ability to hold two truths. Truth number one is, yes, I can make all the decisions myself right now, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But if I want this business to evolve and to change and to grow and to be a legacy business, I need to allow the next generation their vision. I need to allow the next generation to make some mistakes and grow. And that I see over and over again. And when I just had a family on a couple episodes ago, I just was like laughing inside. I'm like, did you guys read all of the books to know this stuff? Did you do this? And no, of course not. It was just the natural side was his dad said to him, look, I don't know what you're going to do with this. It's going to be different than what I do with it. And I just want to celebrate that. And I just want to help you to get to the next phase. Let's see what you do. I'm always here for advice, but you've got to do this your way. Because if you try to do it my way, you're going to get stuck. And so if we grind it into trying to always honor dad, and in branding, you probably get this. As you're doing these things, you've got the logo that great grandma created for the business. And it's so outdated and it's so not there, but everybody wants to honor where we came from. So how do you take that and bring it into the next decade, the next century?
So that's very aligned with, and I've gotten pretty in tune to what I look for whenever I'm talking with, and you're right, a lot of times there is a brand transformation in play on a generational shift. And for many good reasons, because just as obviously the new generation is heading into power in the organization, Likely so are all their customers. All of their relationships are aging out similarly. And it's almost like the next chapter across the board. Right. What I often look for is, does that next generation coming to power have a vision? It doesn't even have to be a good vision. Just have to have one. Because if they're young and they have one, I was just talking to a young fellow. He's a second gen. He has one. It's a little crude, but you know what? It's his. Yeah. He owns it.
Yeah.
And I know he's going to refine it as he goes. But doing it a little better than my dad or my mom, that's not really a vision, is it?
No. And to double down on that just a little bit, the passion in the next generation has to be there. Sometimes we just know that the fire is there and it's okay. And you could gift the business to that next generation. No, they've got no stake in it. And they still have a vision and a passion and they're going to take it and they're going to do their thing with it. The other side of that, though, is if they don't want to buy into the business, if they're not willing to put their money where their mouth is there really the level of passion for it? And I don't think there's any right or wrong. It's just sometimes you have to measure passion by, are you willing to write the check? Are you willing to pay back mom and dad or your dad, your uncle, whoever is the founders or the controlling generation? Are you willing to put your money where your mouth is? Or do you have this plan and this vision and whatnot that's so powerful that you're ready to off and run with it? Both work. There is no right or wrong. I used to think that there was only one way to do all this stuff. And then you see it over and over again. No family does it exactly the same. And there is no right or wrong way. Let me rephrase. There is definitely some right ways. There's some wrong ways of doing it. It's not what's right or wrong for each family, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
So a question in your work and your practice. A lot of times you see that passion and you see that vision, that next generation that's chomping at the bit and is ready to roll. You had it in you, I had it in me. We'll see about the Gen 3 here at Delia Associates, but nonetheless, there's that the drive, the passion, the exposure to the business. I know what it is. I get it. All that. What happens when that's not there? When you are looking out and say there's a next generation and they're being groomed or poised, and I've seen this sometimes, and you probably have too. And there's something that you just know in your gut that they don't have whatever that previous generation had. They're not ready. They may never get it. They may never fully get there as a leader. And really the best move is maybe somebody else taking 100%. That seat. So how do you deal with those circumstances?
Yeah. So remember, go back to the sustainable family legacy lever.
Yeah.
So remember when we talked about values, you have your values, your wife has hers, and you have shared values. That's why you're married, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing for the family. If the family is adding on that sustainable family legacy lever, they're doing three things. It's not just the values that matter. It's what is your vision, G3, rising generation, mm-hmm. for your life? Forget the family. Forget everything else. What do you want to do? Where do you see yourselves going? And then here's our vision of the future. And if they align, great. But if they don't align, then we have some decisions to make. And we do the same thing around purpose. What is your purpose for being? Where do you want to go? And if we're having those conversations and we're open to those conversations that, oh boy, your vision for your future doesn't align with my vision for this business. You know what? If I push you to take it, that's where failure happens. If I feel so compelled to take care of dad's legacy or mom's legacy or uncle's legacy that I'm responsible for their legacy, that's where it fails. Having said that, sometimes there's some people, they may not be happy in what they really wanted to do, but they're fulfilled because they were taking that legacy to another thing because their drive for the family, their desire for the love and acceptance and the stuff that goes with it from the family side of it. So they still get fulfilled, but maybe it wasn't their dream.
True. And it's great that you have a way to sort that out because a lot of times you do see that. And sometimes the next generation just asks that fateful question that they didn't realize was a fateful question. They say something along the lines of, mom or dad, how can I help? And then 10 years later, there they are.
Yeah. And you, my father saw this in his own business. You just made me think of this as a great story. He was going through some coaching, loved it, mm-hmm. wanted to get this coaching for his top employees at the time that were on his team. And the whole thing was, who am I? Where am I going? What am I doing with my life? And dad was just like so jazzed by it. And he sends one of his top people through it. And she realized that she was in the wrong career. And she wasn't jazzed by it. And my father always will talk about the fact that I am so happy that I was able to help her achieve what she wanted to do and move on to her career. He goes, it still stunk because I had to go find somebody new and train somebody new and all that stuff. But it was right for that person. And it would have stunk if they stayed with him for another 3, 4, or 5 years. Eventually, there would have been some cognitive dissonance. There would have been some rub. It wouldn't have gone the right way.
Yeah. There was a previous guest. I'm going to paraphrase his words, but when he was speaking to, you know, some of these family interactions, when family members are in the room together and maybe in, say, an environment where you've brought them together, he said, be truthful, speak your mind, and do no harm. And that's so huge. I'm thinking of, I won't name names, but a family business where there were siblings that were sitting in either third or fourth gen, and one of them did exit. And the way in which the exit happened was with such grace and such dignity that they did no harm, and the siblings loved the hell out of each other today, and it's all okay. And it was a big deal. It was a big deal at the time, but they did it in a way that preserved each other's dignity and honored the family first and honored the fact that they were sibs and loved each other. And just one of them just said, hey, this is not my path. And that's tough, but that sometimes happens. And it's better to be honest and upfront than to be sitting and living with regret. What the heck am I doing here? When you're 50, 60 years old.
Healthy communication, healthy conflict are wonderful things. And if you're a family that can have healthy communication, healthy conflict, and honor the fact that the world's made up of a whole bunch of different types of personality types, we all have different paths, that's awesome. That's the best. If you're trying to just push legacy on people and you must do this because your great-great-grandfather was running this stuff and, oh my goodness, he'd roll over or she'd roll over in their grave if they knew. That's not the kind of pressure we want to put on there. You can still keep the family business intact. You just might have a generation where an outsider's the CEO.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I've seen that model work very well. It works well when when there is that alignment that you spoke about around growth. And sometimes people like to talk about growth, but in their heart of hearts, and it's taken me years to really start to spot it, but they're terrified of growth.
Yeah.
It's scary. And it is scary. It can be.
Yeah.
However, it's one thing to say you want it. It's the other thing to truly in your heart of hearts want it. But sometimes bringing in some outside help or an outside advisor like yourself can help really guide those discussions in a very constructive, useful, and beneficial way. Good to know you're out there.
I have two. You just said something that's really important that I want people to hear this. The benefits of having some outside advice is huge. There's blind spots that we all have, and that's what a good coach does. And think about it this way. I don't care whether you love baseball or football or basketball or just watching the Olympics. None of those people make it to the top of their game without a coach.
That's right.
And if you don't like sports at all, my other analogy is Metallica. Metallica had a point in time when they were about to implode because of all of the dynamics between the band members, and they lost a bassist and they needed to bring in another one. And there was just all kinds of stuff going on and they were ready to go. And they brought in a performance coach and that helped them understand where they were going. And I went out to that performance coach's website one time, and it was, you got quotes from Metallica saying, we would have gone the way of the Beatles if it wasn't for him. If you can't be cooler than Metallica, and you're not as good as Michael Jordan, and they all have the coaches, so why would we not be looking at and saying, I should be thinking about getting myself a coach? And as well, you may outgrow your coach. You may have a coach right now, and yet that coach's abilities to see past and get you to the next level, whatever that looks like for you, they may not be able to do that because their skill set is set at a certain level.
In fact, speaking of it, I remember that they were very public about that too, if I'm not mistaken. That
they were. It's in their documentary, Some Kind of Monster, their documentary. And my wife, who does not like that music whatsoever, loved watching that documentary to see them as human beings going through the things that they were going through.
Absolutely.
I highly recommend watching, if you're a family business, watching Metallica's Some Kind of Monster together and talking about it.
In fact, I think one of the band members made a comment when they were like accused of being something of a sellout relative to being somewhat corporate or doing these types of things. And he said something along the lines of sellout. Yeah. Every time we go to an arena, we sell out. So I was like, that's a good comeback.
Yeah. A good buddy of mine in Jersey, Jeff Savlov, who's a family business coach, introduced me to that whole Metallica thing. And he does a whole presentation around it, just fabulous to look at all the little nuances throughout the documentary of how Metallica looked like and acted like a family business and had to make these conversations come to life. It was really cool, very unique.
That's a great analogy. Last question, and Michael, forgive me. I feel like we could talk to you for 2 hours.
Oh, this is great. I apologize.
So for listeners who want to learn or hear even more, what's the best way for them to find you or connect with you or even check out some of your resources, which you have plentiful?
Sure. I would say follow me on LinkedIn just to get a who am I and what is Michael all about so you can see what we post about and get a flavor. Michael Palumbos, Palumbos is Palumbos, and you can find me on LinkedIn easily. And then the website, familywealthandlegacy.com, and you will have some assessments up there that you can get a hold of just to give yourself, where are we, what's going on, what is our flywheel looking like, and we'll also have some courses that we're putting up there. We don't have them up right now. We're just about to put some private briefings up there, and we'll have some other courses that people can dive into to get some flavors to say, how could these guys help me? And what's really unique is that we feel that we're building something unique. Mm-hmm. And because of my 15 years as a wealth advisor, 25 years as a wealth advisor, 15 years working with family dynamics coaches, in the last almost 10 years now working with business coaches, we're bringing all of the best coaches from the different places together under one roof as a resource for families. So then they're not having to go out and interview, oh, I need a business coach. Now I got to go and interview 5 business coaches. Now I got, where do I find a family legacy coach? Oh my goodness, our family's going to implode. What do we need some help.
Yeah.
And so we bring all of them together under one space.
I think you definitely said it best. Really, with so many different chefs in the kitchen, somebody's got to orchestrate it all. And it sounds like you've mastered that and done some amazing things. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing a wealth of knowledge and even more behind it. Again, we've been speaking with Michael Palumbos, founder of Family Wealth and Legacy and creator of the Family Business Family Office. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Michael, thank you again for being with us.
And thank you so much for having me. It was a blast. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.